Episode number 31 of the podcast is brought to you by First Row Collectibles. Head on over to their website. It's www.firstrow.ca and use the promo code FNP at checkout for free shipping on your order. We're also brought to you by Sisu, definitely the best mouth guard out there. Head on over to sisuguard.com and use the promo code FNP10 for 10% off your order today.
Ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for the Fight Night Picks podcast with your host, Craig Allen.
It's Thursday, July 26th. Yeah, I said Thursday. We've got an episode coming out Thursday. We've got one coming out on Friday on YouTube, number 31 of the Fight Night Picks podcast. I got a couple great guests, so let's get into it. I should be an auctioneer after that one. That was a lot of quick talking. All right, so episode number 31 of the Fight Night Picks podcast. I'd like to thank First Row Collectibles and Sisu for bringing us the episode. So like I said, I've got a couple of great guests. We get Ty O'Keefe from Fansided and the Fight Network. We're going to break down UFC Calgary. Didn't anticipate that we get into every single fight, but there's a lot of interesting fights. You've got seven Canadians on the card. We're going to get into our ratings, obviously, but it's one of the better cards of this year, and it's a Fox card as well, so it's an early start. You'll be able to get to bed at a decent time. And at the same time, we've got Ben Kiley on from Sports Joe over in the UK. He's coming at us from Ireland. We kind of took a focus on last weekend's UFC Hamburg, some of the interesting things that are happening in Bellator. Make sure you check out his articles. If you're a sports fan in general, he doesn't just focus on MMA. It's his main focus, but he writes different articles. And, we both had some different articles come out in the last couple of weeks regarding Bellator. James Gallagher, probably one of the biggest stars to come out of SBG lately in Bellator, and he's also had some articles coming out about Bellator and the similar subjects. So we've been talking the last couple of weeks, and I'm really excited to have him on the podcast. So to begin the episode, here's my conversation with Ty and our breakdown of UFC Calgary, and also we have our very first fan question that we played live on air. So it was really exciting to have that, and I really appreciate the question coming at us from Stephen Rawlings. So here's my conversation with Ty. So episode 31 of the Fight Night Picks podcast, I'm joined by friend of the show, Ty O'Keefe from Fansided and Fight Network. Ty, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you. I am always happy to be back, and we have an interesting card this weekend. So, and obviously some interesting Conor McGregor news as well, which I'm kind of thinking you should start off with the Conor McGregor news, because I think we'd all be interested to hear your opinion on this and the news, what happened today.
So I don't know if I've ever talked about my sentiments towards Conor McGregor on the show, but I'll go on record. I'm not a fan. I don't retweet a lot of the stuff. I don't talk about a lot of the stuff, but I mean, the antics from this past spring leading up to UFC 223, obviously from a fan perspective, you have to be pretty upset. I mean, there were all sorts of fights that we missed out on. Out of the news today, you know, he's not allowed to have contact with Ray Borg, not allowed to have contact with Chiesa, and there was another fella, Ledbetter, that was named in there as well. Can't have contact with three different people. So it's not good from a matchmaking perspective. I mean, obviously now you can't have Chiesa and Borg on the same card as McGregor, which could cause some, you know, some headaches. Borg's challenged for a title in the past. Chiesa has shown he's a little bit of a draw. He's going to be moving up to welterweight, so that's kind of newsworthy. As far as Conor McGregor, fighting style wise, yeah, he's great. He's a champ for life. Had one of the biggest fights of all time against Floyd Mayweather, you know, pay-per-view money wise. But, we haven't seen him fight in the UFC for a very long time. Last fight was against Eddie Alvarez, who's been, I mean, he's fighting this weekend and he's been far more active. And he's been, you know, setting a poor example for people out there, you know, party animals, likes to spend his money, doesn't sit at home counting it, that's for sure. So it'll be interesting to see when we see Conor McGregor back in the octagon. There's talk about MSG, there's talk about Russia, there's, you know, I kind of predicted it, floated it out there, and it was kind of received, but probably not all that well, that, Toronto needs a main event so far, so.
It does, and A&A, he's got no criminal record in Canada. Now, after getting probation and or community service, whatever he got, he does have a minor criminal record in the United States. However, I have always been a fan of Conor McGregor. you know, in the octagon, he is, in my mind, Anderson Silva-like in terms of ability, and he is the only fighter, and I was never that big of a fan of Anderson Silva simply because I felt that Anderson Silva didn't try a lot towards the end of his prime. He started to just kind of, you know, screw around and whatever, and Dana White obviously expressed his disgust with that type of thing as time went on. Anyways, but Conor McGregor is the only other guy besides Silva that I ever have been looking at. And when the fight is on, I cannot blink. I cannot move. I cannot leave the room. I don't care what's going on. There can be a tornado. I'm there. Just by coincidence, when I first started writing in 2013, he had just started. And my first or second MMA article ever was about how I thought he would be a big star. Now, I'm not saying I predicted. That's not what I mean. I'm simply saying that I've covered him since beginning of his UFC time. And actually, I had found out about him in Cage Warriors because I had followed, I was looking after Carl Pendred. And I had followed Pendred down because I don't know if you remember, Pendred was getting more press ahead of Conor McGregor's UFC debut than McGregor was, even this first fight or two. They thought Pendred was going to be, you know, somebody in the UFC. They really did for a while. Anyways, so yeah, I hope he comes back. The sport needs him. Love him or hate him, we cannot deny what he has done for the sport. On one hand, he's created this crazy atmosphere that allows cheaters like Brock Lesnar and people just walk into a title fight because it's all about big money. And personally, I hated every second of the Floyd Mayweather nonsense leading up to it. I had to cover it. I didn't watch the fight. And I'm glad I didn't watch the fight. I've seen it since, obviously, but it that was disgusting. I just want him back in the octagon fighting because he has got X amount of years to do this in his prime. They are running low. Whether we love him or hate him, he is a gift to MMA. And every year, just like John Jones, you see him sitting on the sidelines. We are losing out as fans. And the sport is not developing because he did not only bring fans in, he brought the sport further in its progression.
Now, so, yeah, you had mentioned Anderson Silva, and I think you and I have talked about super fights in the past, and I haven't given a full take. So I personally actually really enjoy super fights. I mean, when I had Josh Gross on, he wrote the book about Inoki and Ali, you know, the biggest super fight. Exactly. And I don't really have a problem with it. I'm actually really excited for Daniel Cormier-Lesnar. I'm not one of those just bleed, you know, I watch it once or twice a year, but I'm really excited for that fight. I think it's going to draw a lot of people in. It's going to be good for the sport. And like many people, I think it's a great opportunity for Daniel Cormier to go out on a high. Now, you talk about Anderson Silva in the ring and some of the antics that he had. You go back and watch that fight that he had with Damian Maia, where he just schooled him. I mean, taunted him. And what have you. I enjoyed that. I like a bit of flair.
Well, what he did to Forrest Griffin, to me, was the ultimate example of his power. I mean, going backwards, you know, up your back foot with a fading away jab.
Yeah.
To the point where Forrest Griffin, and I don't care, Forrest Griffin may not have been the most talented fighter, but that guy had nothing but heart. And for him to put up his arms and say, stop, 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 I mean, that was unbelievable. I don't know if we'll ever see anything like that ever again. Closest I saw to it, honestly, it reminded me, was when Garbrandt did that to Dominic Cruz.
Now, Garbrandt and Halifax's own Gavin Tucker against Sam Cecilia. The same thing. I mean, pieced him up. So I enjoy a fight like that. I mean, I'm one of the guys, and I've said on the podcast, I'm not as active in baseball as I once was, following it every single night, knowing every stat. But I like a guy like Bryce Harper that shows a little bit of flair. Has a nice hairdo. Puts a sticker on the stamp at the bottom of his bat.
You got to get him in. Bryce Harper shows a conservative flair. He's not really that great. He's not going out doing crazy stuff. He says stuff every once in a while. But he's not really – he is like the – and I don't mean to get – political, but he's like the Republican conservative type of superstar in a way. You know, he doesn't getting arrested, which is good. We don't want people getting arrested. I'm just saying. You want to talk about
he's a PG star.
Wild. Bryce Harper, not a good example. I mean, come on, man.
PG star that likes to have some fun and shows a little bit of flair, and the old guard in baseball doesn't enjoy it. So back to what we were talking about. Now, Conor McGregor.
He's going to drag baseball into it.
Conor McGregor, you know, outside of the ring doesn't do a lot of great things, obviously. Lately, it hasn't been great for him. But inside the ring, it's great. So hopefully later on this year, we're able to see a super fight, whether it's Conor and Khabib. You know, even Khabib and Tony, whether or not Tony's coming back. That's a good fight to make, too.
Don't make that fight again after how many times it's been.
Yeah, it's a shame.
And I really believe Dana White this time. I mean, no way. No way.
Yeah, it's...
Four times?
It's a total shame. But we have a lot of great fights to look forward to this weekend. UFC on Fox in Calgary on Saturday. It starts really early. I mean, the Fight Pass prelims start at 4 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock my time. So, you know, you get to have supper, enjoy yourself, and you're not going to bed at 2 or 3 in the morning, which is great. Heading into this weekend, it's one of the new things I want to do on the podcast when I have a guest over and we're talking about the fight card coming up on the weekend. I want to get your take. What do you give this card, you know, as a letter grade going into the weekend?
I honestly, we've seen some really good free cards lately. You know, Hamburg was okay or whatever, but we've seen some Boise top to bottom on paper was great, and it turned out pretty well. I would give this one a solid B, not just top to bottom, but also the three main fights on this card kind of make the whole card worth it to me. There is going to be a lot of Canadian content wherever possible on any type of card that's in this country. And, you know, we'll have certain things that, you know, local people are going to like a lot more than people outside of the area. Yep. You know what I mean? Like a lot of Americans aren't going to know, you know, a lot of things like Random Marcos, things like that. You know, Random Marcos is I feel one of the most underrated female fighters in the sport. And so, you know, stuff like that, but yeah, I'd give it a solid B. Definitely a solid B with a, and the main event, I'll also say, is everybody else is going to say A plus for this main event. I'm only going to give this is going to be an underwhelming main event, I think. I don't think it'll be the best fight of the night.
Yeah, I mean, I have my fight of the night picked out. I had it picked out a couple days ago, and I talked about it on Twitter. And I think it's going to surprise a lot of people. But I give this card, you know, a B plus. I think it's really good. I think one of the really good things about it is, like I said, it's going to be starting earlier. And the fact that you have a 4-fight main card is going to wow a lot of fans. I mean, I'm sure Fox wanted to do that so things could move along quickly. We've seen a lot of main cards with 5 or 6 fights, and then the pacing's really poor. One of the things that I kind of had a problem with last weekend was the fact that just before Manny Bermudez's fight, it said we're going to return at the top of the hour. Was that 1 o'clock? Is it 12:30? What time is it? So things are going to be set in stone here. Things are going to move along well. I think that the prelims are pretty good. If you go onto the UFC's website, you know, as of this afternoon when I was doing my breakdowns and analysis, they didn't have the Devin Powell fight added on yet, which I found kind of strange. And some of the things weren't jiving yet. They didn't have the fight pass prelims, you know, set in stone versus the regular prelims. But overall, good card. Main cards, I almost want to say stellar. I mean, you've got former champions on there. So, you know, why don't we get into it? I think some of the more interesting matchups that are on the prelims, you know, we have former guest of the show, New England's own, owner of Nostos MMA in Somersworth, New Hampshire, Devin Powell. It's his third fight in the UFC, and he's taken on 9-5 Alvaro Herrera. And it's kind of a tough matchup to try and gauge. I mean, Powell hasn't been in the octagon for quite a while. He's found on Dana White's looking for a fight. You know, this past spring, Joe Lauzon squashed one of his nuts. So he had to come back from that injury. It's a tough one for sure. And then if you really look into Herrera, and I had to do a lot of work, you know, he's lost his last two fights to Vicente Luque and Jordan Rinaldi, who they both shown promise in the octagon, but he lost by Von Flu and Darce Choke. So going into the fight, I'm pretty confident in this one. I mean, both guys are 6 feet tall. They're rangy, but Devin Powell, he's got that jujitsu, and I think he's going to be able to pull away with the submission win in that fight.
Yeah. You know, the thing is with this fight for Powell too, it's not like a make or break fight by any stretch of the imagination. It's a test the waters kind of fight for Devin Powell, you know, and coming back from an injury of the nature he suffered against Joe Lauzon is unbelievable in itself, just because you have to get to mental battle as well, I'm sure. We're not going to know Devin Powell's going to be a star no matter what happens on Saturday night. We just got to see if he can get in there, perform consistently, win consistently, build on his mistakes, learn from his mistakes, and move forward. And that's all I'm looking, you know, to see from Powell this weekend, honestly.
Yeah, and I mean,
I do think he'll win, But I'm not looking for anything decisive.
Just no, a little
progression.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, even if it goes to decision, there's no harm in that win there. If you can showcase your skills on the feet and also on the ground, I mean, he's got great ground game. So it should be a good fight there. Next fight on the card, you've got the Canadian, like you had mentioned, number 12 in the world, Quiet Storm, Reina Marcos. She's taking on Nina Ansarov. And, you know, in my breakdowns, my analysis, this was actually a really tough fight to call. I mean, Reina Marcos has great takedown ability, but at the same time, Ansarov has really good takedown defense. And she's a better striker on paper. So it's a kind of a tough matchup. But if you really get into the nitty gritty, I mean, Marcos, her only losses are to Justine Kish, you know, Penne, Kovalkiewicz, Courtney Casey, Alexa Grasso, really big names in that strawweight division.
I wouldn't say that Courtney Casey and Grasso are big names. I will say Justine Kish is another very underrated fighter who hasn't had health on her side for a while, you know, in the beginning of her career and things like that. Reina Marcos, though, to me, is so dangerous. I don't know if you saw that season of Tough that she was on. She is such a hard worker. She learns so fast.
Yeah.
And she adapts so well. But when you're coming up against someone like Nina Ansarov, who trains with Amanda Nunes, who are, you know, and that's her partner. And so she trains with her every day. And I don't know if you've noticed, this last year or so, Ansarov has become a much more accurate striker.
Yep.
She's become a much more powerful striker and a much more patient striker. And it's got Amanda Nunes' influence written all over, and good for her. I mean, that's fantastic to have that type of resource. And so, you know, I don't know. Ansarov has surprised me a lot of times. I do think this is going to be a tough test for her, though. I think if Marcos is gonna win this fight, it's honestly not going to be on her feet. I think she's going to win it on the ground. I think if this fight stays standing, I think the edge goes to Ansarov, just if the fight stays standing. But I know I like Marcos to submit in the second round.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, but if that happens, that will be considered an upset.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, she is.
Everybody wants Ansarov in this fight. So.
She's ranked 12th, Marcos is. Ansarov's 13th. But at the same time, Ansarov's a slight favorite at around minus 145. And to your point, I mean, 5.22 significant strikes per minute to Marcos is 3.07. And I mean, you got to take stats like that with a grain of salt. It all depends on the fight, the fighter. And also, one thing that a lot of people don't get into, how many fights they've had in the UFC.
Yeah.
But both of these two, they've been around for quite some time. They've got a lot of fights on their record. And it should be a great fight. And I mean...
And Marcos has come back from training, too. So she trained with TriStar for a while. I don't know if she's still there. But yeah, these and you know, obviously Ansarov is training with Nunes. So these are both women coming from very, very strong backgrounds.
Yeah,
these are two professionals, definitely.
And I mean the next fight on the card, we'll kind of go over it just quickly. It's top flyweight bout. You got Dustin Ortiz and Matheus Nicolau. And Nicolau, he's a heavy favorite in the fight. I mean, well, not heavy, but a minus 200 favorite going into it. He's got a lot of different ways to finish the fight. It seems that he's a much better striker. But, I mean, if you really look into it, you look at Dustin Ortiz's last fight at UFC 220. He had 7 takedowns against Pantoja, and his striking was better. And realistically, I think Nicolau is kind of the same type of fighter as Pantoja. Pantoja ran over Brandon Moreno in his last fight. I mean, totally pieced him up. So I've got this one going Ortiz's way and picking the underdog in that one.
Yeah, me too. And I don't. It seems to be a theme with this card all of a sudden, these underdogs. But Ortiz, definitely. I think a lot of people have been waiting for Dustin Ortiz to do something big for a while now. And I don't know if it'll happen Saturday. I don't know if it's the right stage. You know, everything has to come together for that to happen. It would sure be great if Dustin Ortiz could finally fulfill some of that potential we've kind of been waiting on. Also, that division, you know, it's so top-heavy.
Yeah.
And to get just anybody that hasn't yet gone and fought the champ, get some new blood in there, some new capable, legitimate, qualified blood in there to try to dethrone the champ would be so nice. So I'm taking Ortiz in this fight for sure, but I'm hoping he kind of, you know, there's something in the fight that gets memorable. It's kind of a moment for him that gives him a little bit more press and pushes him forward. That would be more, just as much of a win for Ortiz as an actual win, I think. So,
I mean, yeah. And switching gears, your next fight, it's also a flyweight fight, but it's in the women's flyweight division. You've got number 3 Canadian Alexis Davis taking on Caitlin Chookagian, ranked 7th right now. And I mean, I don't want to sound like a homer, and I will, but I've got Davis in this fight. You know, she's got 10 of 19 fights. She's won by finish. She's the underdog in that fight as well, but I think she's going to be able to get the win in Calgary. I mean, she's got more tools in her tool belt. Experience counts in this one. Davis is a much more polished grappler, and if you really look at the striking metrics with the experience that they have, they're pretty evenly matched. But, I mean, Davis, she's 3-2 in her last five. I mean, losses coming to Ronda Rousey and Sarah McMahon, so there's no trouble in that one. And Chookagian, 3-1 in her last four in the UFC, and her only loss was by split decision to Liz Carmouche. So I've still got Davis in that fight, and yeah, like I said, I think experience counts.
Because of the way Carmouche is kind of a similar game as Alexis Davis does in a way, if you think about it. They're both ground-based fighters who like to think they can strike, but honestly, they know their best game is on the ground. First of all, you are a homer, so you're always going to be a homer. You are the definition of a homer, so enough with that. But I, too, you know, my Canadian, I guess, coming out, because I think Alexis Davis, just based on experience alone, she has been in there with some, you know, some veterans, and obviously in the bantamweight, I think it was bantamweight division earlier on in her career. And you know, she is definitely one of this country's top female fighters of all time, just because she's consistently performed for so long. You got to kind of wonder, if she doesn't win, if Davis doesn't win, what would be next for her? Where would that leave her? I don't know what the current status of her UFC contract is, but I know that her star has not risen lately. I mean, she's definitely kind of taken a tumble down, you know, the rankings in terms of popularity, in terms of success. So she definitely needs a victory, I think. And I am going to pick her to win, but man, I don't want to know what a loss would do for her right now.
Yeah, and I mean, I think there's a lot of fights that you could make in that flyweight division. There's a lot of names that have kind of crept up the rankings, but also there's a lot of them that have kind of dropped, and it's kind of a stagnant division. But the good thing is they're finally starting to stack it, and we're seeing more fighters in the flyweight division, which is something that I've harped on for a long time. But I think it's a really good opportunity for Davis to start a rise, and I mean, who knows what could happen. You've got Montano fighting Shevchenko later on this year, so lots of great things happening in that division.
And just a side note, I think Shevchenko is headed, just like everybody else does, for a very long reign at the top of that division.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, she's one of the best fighters, period. Like, one of the
so
best
much
ones
like
out
Holly
there.
Holm, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of they have a couple of tough losses.
Yeah.
And those losses all of a sudden took them out of the minds of people, stopped thinking of them as potential champions like Holm and Shevchenko. But really, Holm and Shevchenko are as good as any other female in the entire sport.
Yep, so anyways, for sure.
Go ahead.
Last fight on the Fight Pass prelims, you got Halifax's own 15-6, John McDessie, and he's taking on Ross the Real Deal Pearson. Now, I saw an interview with Ross Pearson today. He said he wants to make it to the top of the division. He wants to win a championship. He's married, is he not, to a ring girl. So
I have no idea.
A lot of opportunities for him.
He's been around forever.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he's got a lot of fights on his record. And if you look at John McDessie, he knocks out 60% of his opponents. He's got a 72% striking defense and 5.17 significant strikes per minute. So by stats alone, and if you really look into it, Ross Pearson lost four fights before winning his last fight. And he fought really good fighters in a different division. Some of them in a different division. So I think it's pretty cut and dry. I've got McDessie in the fight. Homer again.
Homer pick.
He's got the power. He's going to be able to get the finish, and he's a favorite at -175.
It seemed like the more tattoos Ross Pearson got, the worse he got in the octagon. Like, the more every tattoo was like another loss. Because this guy has been around for so long. He's a product of the Ultimate Fighter. And he won the Ultimate Fighter, I think. He showed so much promise. And then it's just, he's had some tough losses, but he's also had the crap kicked out of him a few times.
Yeah.
You know, and John McDessie is a journeyman. If he were a baseball player, he would be like one of these guys who played for 7 teams already.
Yeah.
That's nothing against John McDessie, because that means 7 teams want you. So that means he's been good enough to be at the highest level of the sport for a long time. But I'm going to go against the grain, because I just think Ross is due.
Yeah.
I just think he's due, and I think it's going to be one of those in close, they're in a clinch, and as they're backing away, the Real Deal lands his first significant punch of like the last decade.
Yeah,
and just floors McDessie, and I think it'll happen in the first round.
No,
that's my call. But yeah, and you know, if he has more tattoos afterwards, I might not feel the same for his next fight, but we'll see what happens.
I mean, before I get into the next fight, like, you look at those four losses. Will Brooks, former Bellator champion, didn't have a great success in the UFC, but still, you can't take that from him. Jorge Masvidal, Stephen Ray, and Hooker. I mean, those are tough guys to fight for sure. I mean, even Stephen Ray,
where his contract is right now.
Yeah.
Like, you lose, usually you lose two or three in a row, you're gone.
Well, I mean, it's kind of, if you look at his last, 10 or 15, it's kind of like a marbled steak. You enjoy it. I mean, there's fat and then there's the meat and it's kind of good and it just keeps going. And then it's just the rind on the end of the steak and then a little bit of meat. So it's kind of tough to tell what's next for Ross Pearson, but I mean, he's got a good attitude.
It's like a poor man's Jeremy Stephens, like a less successful Jeremy Stephens. He's been around forever and suffered a crap load of losses, and there have been points where you're like, what is this guy doing?
Yeah, well, I mean, the name that comes to mind for me is kind of like a Josh Berkman. He was, 1-6 before fighting Moreno, who was on this card. But next fight, it's the first fight on the prelims. I said it on Twitter, this is my pick for fight of the night. You've got number 15 ranked Gadjimurad Antigulov, and he's taken on a guy returning from USADA suspension. They call him the Hulk, Ion Cutelaba, one of the most interesting guys in the UFC, one of the most exciting guys to watch. If you've never seen his fight against Henrique da Silva, go watch it. He does kind of his JDS impersonation and then goes out there and starches da Silva. So if you look into it, I mean, Antigulov, he's on a 14-fight win streak. 19 of 20 wins come by finish. He's got 15 submissions on his record. Hasn't fought since UFC 211, which was in May of last year. So
yeah, that could be a factor.
That's not good. I mean, he's a bigger guy, but he's taken on Cutelaba, who's huge. He got in trouble for ozone therapy, which, if you're not familiar with ozone therapy treatment, it's more or less known as blood doping, where you take blood from the young and inject it into the older person and you give them more blood. And it's good for you, but you're not allowed to take it if you're a professional fighter. And if you look into Cutelaba, 12 of 13 fights have been by finish. He gets the knockouts. And I mean, it's a tough fight to pick just due to the fact that if you look into it, Cutelaba has been submitted by Misha Cirkunov, who was on a run at one point. And both of Antigulov's wins in the UFC are by submission. But I'm actually, even with that layoff, I'm going to take Antigulov to win by submission and keep his 14-fight win streak intact, make it 15, and he's the favorite in that fight as well.
And I'm not going to stray from that because it wasn't the 14 straight wins that impressed me. It said he's finished 19 of his 20 opponents, of his last 20 opponents, something like that. This guy is just, if you're a finisher at this level, and you're coming up, that's what, and it comes to, picking guys, to me, that's what makes a difference, finishes and decisions. Because people who consistently finish seem to have that instinct that separates them from the pack. And Antigulov has proven to have that. Yeah. I mean, it's simple as that. And I'm definitely going with him. And I think he's going to knock him out.
Yeah, I mean, it could go either way. And that's the reason why I have it as fight of the night. So get excited for that one, first fight on the prelims.
Good call. Yeah, it's a good pick. It's a solid pick.
Appreciate
it. Not my pick, but a solid pick.
Next fight on the card, another Canadian, 23-11-1, Raging Cajun Johnson, and he's taken on 15-1 Islam Makhachev. And if you're not familiar with Islam Makhachev, at UFC 220 on the first fight to open up the night, he threw a shovel punch. It was a one-punch shovel punch knockout of Gleison Tebow. And it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen live. I was sitting in the nosebleeds. Everybody went nuts. And then there was a 20-minute break, which kind of left a bit of a lull in the crowd.
Yeah, just killed everything.
But Cajun Johnson, I mean, he's been fighting professionally since 2002. His first fight was a loss to Rory McDonald, which is kind of neat. He's got a win over Adriano Martins, who actually knocked out Makhachev, which is his one loss. But I don't see this fight going Johnson's way. I mean, Makhachev's a -700 favorite right now, so it's pretty hard to bet against him.
The best work that Cajun Johnson has done has been with Project Spearhead and the unionizing efforts, and he should be commended for that. He stood up at a time, at the fighter retreat, what was it, 2 years ago?
Yep.
Right, maybe around UFC 200, I can't even remember now. Anyways, he stood up and said, this Reebok deal is not fair, and not those words, but, and he didn't just leave it at that. He joined, I forget her name now off the top of my head, who was doing the Project Spearhead. She is a
Leslie Smith.
Who?
Leslie Smith.
Yes, thank you, Leslie Smith. And Cajun Johnson, I believe, is the vice president of that effort or on the board of that effort. So, you know, he can be proud of that. He's done a ton of work with that stuff. And fighters need to unionize, so that should be commended. In the octagon, he has not matched those accomplishments, and I don't see that changing on Saturday.
No, I mean, and another neat kind of thing about Cajun Johnson, trains out of TriStar, whether or not he's based in Vancouver or he travels to Montreal, at both of the different setups. So you got another Canadian on the card. There's 7 in total. Next fight, another Canadian, 7-1-1, Hakeem Dawodu, and he's taken on Austin Arnett, who's 15-4. Dawodu's kind of looking to right the ship. He had a lot of success in World Series of Fighting. Lost his debut. I mean, he got clipped by a right hand, dropped, and then he got into a nasty guillotine, yeah, and Danny Henry slept him. But if you look at his record, 6 of 7 wins by knockout. He's a roughly -360 favorite in the fight. And, you know, Austin Arnett, he was on a 13-fight win streak at one point, but I'm taking Dawodu to get the win. I think he's going to right the ship in front of his... Now, some people might not realize it, but it's a big, big country. I mean, I'm probably a 7 or 8 hour plane ride from east to west, but Dawodu's fighting out of Calgary. It's his hometown, so looking to get the win there at home.
Yeah, it's hard to go. I've been to Calgary, and it's a beautiful city, and it's hard to think that they would have a guy coming out of their hometown guy who you wouldn't want to win.
Exactly.
Calgary is, if you've been there around the summertime as well, I got dropped in there off of Greyhound one day, and I tell you, it's a great city. But no, I'm going with him as well. I would like to see him again make some noise. It's not very interesting because we're agreeing on so many of these picks, but and you're turning me into a closet homer. But he did so much in the World Series of Fighting. If it's not now, when?
Yeah, you exactly. Know,
like, he's not going to make his mark Saturday. He's not going to announce his presence after losing his debut Saturday. Then when? Then what are we doing here? You know what I mean? So yeah, I'm going with him. And also, let's not underestimate the hometown crowd. These guys are just coming off Stampede in Calgary. Yeah. They're all amped up. It's summer out there, and it's like 40 degrees in Alberta. For those of you who don't know, Alberta is unbelievably hot. It's like 105 degrees in Medicine Hat every day in August. And so, you know, these guys love to go inside, get rowdy, have some beers, a nice cool climate where this fight's going to be held. They're coming off Stampede Week, and they're going to be going crazy for this guy.
No.
And rightfully so.
Yeah, if you're a Calgary fan, I can't remember which pay-per-view it was or fight night that it was that they last hosted. But from first-hand accounts, I believe there were 4 or 5 fights that were canceled, big-name fights. And they got left with a really bad card, didn't enjoy it at all. And another thing, if there's any fans that are going to the Saddle Dome that have never been to the Saddle Dome before, and if you sit up high, you're going to have a rough time trying to see stuff down below. Yeah. I sat nosebleed for a Flames game one time, and it was pretty rough seeing the ice. So that's it with Dawodu. Really looking forward to his second fight in the UFC. And then your last fight on the prelims, you've got another guy from Alberta and Jordan Meehan, and he's taking on Alex Morneau at welterweight. And it's a really tough fight going into it. I mean, Meehan had a really high ceiling. He's had 8 fights in the UFC, 4-4. You know, he's got another guy with a pro loss to Rory McDonald from 2006. And Morneau, you look into it, 3-1 with 1 no contest in his last 5, I guess. And that 1 no contest was against Nico Price, where he got knocked out, but Nico Price tested positive for marijuana. So, realistically, I mean, both guys, they share pretty similar stats. They've had enough time in the octagon that you can go through the stats and make a judgment. And I think if Jordan Meehan can get some takedowns early, bring the fight down to the ground, fight like he fought against Eric Silva in his last fight. You know, he had 97 total strikes that landed and 3 takedown attempts. He can bring a decision win home.
Yeah, I like Jordan Meehan. I like watching him fight. I don't know what it is, which is something, I don't know. I like the effort he puts in. To be a homer, I guess, again, because you're turning me into one. You can't go against Meehan in this fight. But overall, he's been in there with some tough guys. And yes, he is facing a test on Saturday. Let's not overlook it and just be all Jordan Meehan, because I think he's at that point where he's ready to start really stringing together some big wins. I like this one to be the first of it. And then, you know, in his next fight, if Jordan Meehan comes out on top on Saturday, you could see him getting a top 10 guy maybe, you know, one of these days pretty quick. Because if not, what's not, like I always say, if not what, you know what I mean? Because it's true. What are we doing here? So you got to kind of, if you look down the road for Jordan Mead, and if he wins on Saturday, that road gets paved very nicely, you know, into the rankings, possibly a spot in a top 10 guy or at least a top 15 guy. And once that happens and you crack those rankings, anything can happen. We've all seen.
And that's the tough thing with me. And like when I look over his fights, losses to Thiago Alves, who at one point was a top guy, Emil Mech showing a lot of promise, didn't get the win last weekend. Bilal Muhammad and Matt Brown. So all top guys. So, you know, if he does get the win and then he gets another top opponent, that's when it's going to be really interesting to see what happens to Jordan Mead. Because he's still a young guy and he's still got fights left over. But yeah, I mean, 4-4 in the UFC, it's kind of tough right there to see what's going to happen to Jordan
Mead. Yeah, he's got some work to do. He's got, no matter what happens, he has work to do past Saturday.
Yep, for sure. So before we get into the main card, we've actually got a fan question. You know, Stephen Rawlings asked me a question on Twitter. And, you know, he's been back and forth with me quite a bit here in the last couple, over the last couple of weeks.
We welcome the discourse.
Bring for sure. I love it. So here's his question.
I had an idea. I got my cable bill today and it was $300, and that's due to UFC pay-per-views. Now I want to run something by you. I was thinking about, do you foresee maybe the UFC doing partial pay-per-views? And what I mean by that is that they can promote the co-main event and the main event and maybe sell for $30 to $35 instead of buying the whole card. They can notify you via email or text message since, you know, it doesn't start at a set time. I feel like these cards are very saturated and sometimes people don't want to see the whole card, including me, you know, where the first three fights of the card could be undesirable and even a co-main event sometimes. Due to injury, pull out, etc. What's the chances you think the UFC might go that route? Because for the people who are on the fence that don't buy the pay-per-view, maybe they would buy a chunk for $30 or $35 so they could see the co-main event and the main event. Do you think that hurts or helps the UFC? I'd like to get your feedback on. Thanks. And Fight Night Picks podcast is awesome. Thanks, man.
Awesome, Steven. So I really appreciate the question. You know, in my mind, it all depends on location, actually, depending on how much you're going to pay for pay-per-view. So, I mean, up here in Canada, you're going to pay, what, upwards of $60 a pay-per-view. You've got your Fight Pass account for $10 a month. You're going to have DAZN coming up for Bellator, but just keeping it back to the UFC. So your ESPN Plus deal in the States, that's for the States only. So right now, internationally, we're kind of left in the dark. Canada and otherwise, I'm not sure what they're going to do. I think the idea is that they're going to have more fights on TSN. You're going to have to keep your fight pass. You're going to have to buy pay-per-views. But for those of you in the States, you know, you get your ESPN Plus. It's bundled in with Fight Pass. I think the plan's going to be to go to a WWE type structure where you get all the pay-per-views and then you got to pay your flat fee. I think that's the best option. But if the UFC is looking to capitalize and make the most money that they can, they're just going to keep the structure that they have.
Exactly. I lived in the States for half my life. And I'm telling you, the ESPN deal is going to look no different than the Fox deal does now. Fox is just going to be pushed out and ESPN is going to come in and replace them. It's going to look the exact same. Now, in terms of breaking up a main card and charging partial, charging for a partial co-main event, main event, $30 for that, and then, you know, watch the first few fights. Unfortunately, that will never happen because that main card is the product that the UFC puts out. That's the product that they expect us to pay for. Different than the pair of jeans that Calvin Klein puts out. Or, you know, the new album that Kanye or Drake just dropped.
I'll stop that's you right it's there. Product, I understand what you're saying, and I understand what Steven's saying at the same time, because if you're a fan of the NBA, if you're a fan of Major League Baseball, right now, instead of buying a whole season to watch every team, you can get your team or you can buy a single game. So I understand what he's saying. You know, if I could log on to UFC Fight Pass and Conor McGregor's fighting Khabib, but I don't want to watch the whole pay-per-view and I pay $10 for one fight, it'd be a great deal. But depending on location, ESPN Plus deal, and the way that the platform is now, I think they're going to try and capitalize and they're going to make you buy the whole pay-per-view.
ESPN, and this ESPN deal will not affect pay-per-views. And honestly, nothing outside of the pay-per-view structure they have now will impact the pay-per-view structure. Breaking up that main card into individual blocks to buy or not buy would be no different than, like I was saying, Calvin Klein cutting up one leg off of his jeans and saying, here, you can have this piece of my leg. It's not going to happen because that is their product, that main card. Now, I get the reasoning behind it. I think it's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
But it'll just yeah. never happen because the UFC is greedy. They do not care. And honestly, and I'm not going to call, I'm not going to say our caller is not a hardcore fan because obviously he's a very educated and knowledgeable guy. You can tell, you know, by the way he asked the question. But not liking those first few fights on the main card and loving the main event, the co-main event, is the difference between a hardcore fan and a common, you know, general of the masses type fan. You know what I mean? Like a regular casual fight fan. Regular hardcore fight fans will watch every fight on that main card at least and then dive into the prelims probably too. Casual fight fans will make the argument he just made, which is that sometimes I don't know or even give a damn who is on the first few fights of the main card. I just want the main event. And that is the problem the UFC is having in terms of bringing in the masses. Because in order to get the two best fights, you've got to sit through X amount of other fights. And casual fight fans do not want to stomach that. Period.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
it's an argument that's going to be made forever.
Yeah, I appreciate the question for sure. And Steven's a hardcore fan, 100% hardcore fan.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's definitely a tough one. I mean, there's a lot of moving pieces. We this deal's huge. I mean, we can't escape it. It's over $1 billion. And then at the same time, Bellator with their deal with DAZN. It's really interesting to see where the sport's going, where the money's going. We talk unions. Who's going to get paid? Do fighters get paid more?
When the UFC sold to MEING for $4 billion, at the end of the day, the fans did not notice any difference in the programming they saw before the sale and the programming they're seeing now, especially on pay-per-views. So why would this ESPN deal have any effect if the sale of the company didn't have any effect? ESPN is just going to push out Fox. We're still in Canada. I don't know how they're going to work it, but I guarantee you TSN and the Fight Network will break up the prelims and the main cards that are on TV like they do now. We'll get them just as we do now, and instead of saying Fox in the corner, it'll have ESPN logo, period, end of story. In the States, you guys have ESPN Plus. I don't know why they wouldn't want to make all this available to North Americans. I don't know why you would want to make this exclusive. Like, for example, why fight fans are having to struggle to get Helwani's ESPN Plus show right now.
Yeah.
I mean, give me a break. On to the main card.
So,
thank you for the question.
Main card starts out with the Canadian gangster. He used to be the Quebec kid. Now he's a Canadian gangster. Olivier Aubin Mercier. And he's taking on Alexander the Great Hernandez. And so...
Nobody calls themselves a gangster, first of all.
No, so, but I mean, he does have a nice fanny pack.
I'm just saying.
And he had the Rock's old... type Farouk security detail today, so I thought that was kind of neat. But Hernandez, 6 of 9 wins by finishes. I mean, he shocked the world with his knockout of Benil Dariush in his UFC debut at UFC 222, riding a 7-fight win streak. OAM's on a 4-fight win streak. You know, he had his own quick finish against Evan Dunham at UFC 223. I think this is another one. I mean, I already gave you my fight of the night candidate, but this is another one that could go either way.
No, I can't pick two.
I can't pick two.
Homer, and they're both. Give me a break. You can't pick two and be a homer the whole card.
All right. Well, I'm not going to lie.
Draw a line in the sand.
I can't lie to the good fans of the podcast, but yeah, I've got OAM in this one. I mean, he's a slight favorite.
Surprise.
More well-rounded ground game. He's got great takedown defense and offense at the same time, and he's always evolving.
And after beating Evan Dunham, who is a veteran, who is, you know, he's one of those veterans that a lot of younger guys have to come up against to test themselves. You wonder if Aubin Mercier can build on that win.
Yeah.
Because he's climbing that level in a crowded division. And it's kind of just like, you know, if to come up against a guy and beat a veteran like Dunham, if he doesn't win on Saturday, to me, it's almost like the win over Dunham was worth nothing. Because you would think, you know, like it's part of the stepping stone. Like it might as well send him back down 2 steps because slipping at this point in his MMA journey would be very costly for him. And I don't want to see that happen. I do like him to win this fight. I can't believe there are so many Canadians on this card that I forgot about.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you. And now we both look like a couple of homers who have no, you know, no sand.
So yeah, I should fly the flag behind me. But that's it for the Canadians on the card. You know, your next fight, you've got former champion Joanna Jędrzejczyk taking on Tisha, the Tiny Tornado Torres. Before doing my analysis.
I love this fight.
Before doing my analysis for the fight, I already had my mind up on who was going to win. Now, you know, numbers are going to tell you one story. Joanna was a huge champion. Torres has had a build-up. She's learned, you know, since moving her camp to Colorado, living with Raquel Pennington. I mean, those two are totally focused on fighting. It's great see what they're doing there. The one thing I really don't like about Joanna, and I put a tweet out there, and it didn't get any traction, which I was surprised by. In the countdown Road to the Octagon, Joanna said, the last time, or in my second loss to Rose Namajunas, and used air quotes. And then right after that, she said, oh, but I'm a humble person. I ride my bike that I brought from Poland. I ride it to the gym.
And I put it on the plane because I couldn't find a bike here that I liked.
That irritates me too. If you're coming off back-to-back losses to Rose Namajunas, you lost those fights. You got knocked out in one of them.
Decisively.
Exactly. So there's no denying it. But Tisha Torres on a rise. She got outstruck 151-88 in her last fight and got taken down 10 times against Jessica Andrade.
I have been waiting. This fight is my fight tonight, first of all. I have been following Tisha Torres forever. And Tisha Torres, to me, is one of those kind of Jeremy Stevens type fighters who has the ability and the talent that she sporadically shows. To you're like, man, this could be a contender. This girl could fight for a title. And then slips up. Her only two losses are to Namajunas and Andrade.
Yeah.
And her last fight was the loss to Andrade. She won three straight before that, including, I think, she beat Beck Rawlings, Michelle Watterson, and I can't remember who the third person was she beat there.
Yep.
But anyways, and then she lost to Andrade, which broke that momentum, and that was just this year recently.
Mm.
But this is no doubt, make no mistake, this is the biggest fight of Torres' career to date. And if we don't know if Joanna can come back because she's lost twice. And when you're a champion with her mindset, this drive, 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 I'm this, I'm that, I'm this, I'm that, you often run into people like Robbie Lawler, who wasn't necessarily verbally arrogant, I'm not saying that, but he was a confident guy, and he struggled after losing the belt to the point where it kept him out of action. Ronda Rousey, we saw what happened with her. She crumpled after losing the belt. Now, Joanna, give her credit, she hopped right back in there against Namajunas, who knocked her out very convincingly in the first round. I had picked Joanna to beat Namajunas both times, and I was wrong, dead wrong. We don't know. This is Joanna's first fight since those losses. We do not know if she can come back from that, because sometimes there's just a button that gets pushed, and then the magic is gone. And I can't explain it. Jose Aldo is going through it a little bit, I think, after McGregor lost. You know, he beat Edgar, and then, you know, he's got the – we'll talk about that later. Point being is, though, I like Torres for the upset.
Yep.
She is a tornado. I think that's her nickname, the tiny tornado or something like
that. Yep.
She is a world-class athlete. She works as hard as anybody in the sport.
And she's in better shape than she's ever been. I mean, she's a physical specimen.
Like a ton of bricks.
Yep.
She can take punches too. Her chin is rock solid. She has had her chin tested so many times. I would love to see Tisha Torres win just simply because, man, she deserves it. You know what I mean? Like, honest, she deserves it. This is my fight of the night. I would love to see a war. An absolute war on the ground, on the feet. I don't care. I just want to see them go. And I think the biggest question, unfortunately, and it overshadows the biggest fight of Torres' career, the biggest question going into this fight is, can Joanna bounce back from these two losses to Namajunas? We've seen champions fail before, and, man, she's got a test in front of her. So I like Torres. This is my fight of the night, and I like Torres to win. And I like Torres to knock her out in the second round.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that happening. Going into the fight, you know, I'll let the cat out of the bag. I had Torres winning the fight. Just based on, you know, physique, training. I mean, those two are so, like, that mindset. I mean, oh, I want to quit. And then the coach throws Pennington back out there. I think that's the same mindset that Torres is going to have. They're both super confident fighters. And that kind of attitude wins championships. That's what you need. But at the same time, and I mean, you know, we're going to get into it with Aldo and Stevens, but I'm not going to get into the numbers with Aldo. But for Joanna, you know, you got to bring it up. 6.6 significant strikes per minute. And she's got an 80% takedown defense, which I think could win her the fight. I mean, if you look at Andrade, who, I'll be honest, I think Andrade is going to be the next champion there. I think she's going to be able to beat Rose Namajunas coming up. But if you look at that fight that Torres had, Andrade is a different type of fighter. I mean, really takedown heavy, really wrestle heavy, coupled with great striking. But I think Ioana's going to be able to get it. I mean, 5 inches of height, 5 inches of reach. She's right around the fighting weight right now. So I'm picking Ioana to win, but I think it's probably going to go to decision if she does get the win.
I could see that. I could definitely see it. But it's going to be one hell of a fight. I hope so, anyways.
Yeah. The
next fight on the card, though, is great, too. So
I talked about it. So you got former champ number 2, Jose Aldo, taking on Jeremy Stephens, who's ranked number 4. Top featherweights. You know, Aldo was unbeaten from 2006 to 2015. Like I said, no stats. But he's 1-3 in his last 4. You lose to Connor. You lose twice to Holloway, which shouldn't have happened. I don't really understand why he fought Holloway the second time.
Yeah.
But
yeah, Holloway gave him that fight out of respect.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Frankie Edgar, the fight that he did win. It was close on paper, but he stuffed all of Edgar's takedown attempts. There were 11 of them. Stuffed them all. Striking was similar, but Aldo was able to come out on top, won that fight by decision. And if you look at Jeremy Stephens, he's won 3 fights in a row. He beat Gilbert Melendez, which, and then he beat Duho Choi, and he beat Josh Emmett. Josh Emmett was
ranked
3rd at the time.
Yeah. You know, and he did deserve that 3rd ranking.
Yeah.
He beat Ricardo Lamas and shot in from the outside of the top 10 into the 3rd spot.
Yep.
And he beat Ricardo Lamas, who was way out of his prime.
Yep.
So that, yeah, Emmett didn't deserve to have that ranking. So that it was a lopsided, matchup going into
now,
it.
Now, yeah. I was surprised in that fight because, I mean, Emmett, a wrestle-heavy guy, you saw him compete in ACB JJ14, which will probably be the last one that you see. But it's good, you know, it was good to see him back competing. But yeah, I mean, as far as this fight goes, I think Steven's gonna knock Jose Aldo out. Aldo's a slight favorite in this fight at -130. But you know, Jeremy Stephens, he's got what, 28 wins, 14 losses. So
yeah,
2-1.
You know, listen to this. Jeremy Stephens, this is people he's lost to, okay? He's lost to Frankie Edgar, Max Holloway, Charles Oliveira, Cub Swanson, Anthony Pettis, Donald Cerrone, Eve Edwards, Melvin Guiard, Joe Lozon, Gleason Tebow, Spencer Fisher, and Dean Thomas.
Okay, top guys.
And Renato Moicano or whatever. I can't
remember. Yeah, Renato Moicano. Yeah, top guys. Yeah.
And on top of that, but I'm saying those are just the big names he's lost to, okay, that are established guys. Now, on one hand, you get a ton of experience from fighting as long as he has against those types of guys. He's won 3 straight. That's great. However, this to me has an Aldo decision written all over it. Yes, Aldo has lost a step or 2. Yes, he was exposed in 3 of his last 4 fights. I kind of wish Edgar would have got one of those wins just because Edgar deserved it. And if Aldo was going to, you know, go down, it would have been MMA justice for Edgar to get one of those victories. But anyways, so I think it's got a decision written all over it. While Aldo has fallen behind and he's lost a step, he hasn't lost enough to lose to Jeremy Stephens. Jeremy Stephens is a violent, dangerous striker, dangerous everything. He can come on you like a wildfire, and he preys on panic, preys on overwhelming people. And Jose Aldo still has enough to outsmart and to stop him. And I think it's got a bloody decision written all over it, in Aldo's favor in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, Calgary fans, they've been given on paper a great card. Now we'll see how it plays out, but on paper it's great. So you had written a really great article. Eddie Alvarez needs a win to secure a big contract. If you watch the countdown, the guy's got a nice house, nice crib, trains at a great gym.
Well, that's not a cheap neighborhood either. It's a nice place.
So, you know, going into this main event, I had my mind made up going into it. I'm sticking to my pick, but how do you see the main event going in this fight?
Well, everybody wants it to be the slugfest that they thought we all got cheated out of last time. You know, that's what everybody wants. I do think we will get that, because both of these guys are known as, you know, they're the type of guys will stand like Diego Sanchez well and just start swinging recklessly with their head down and be like, yeah, let's do this, let's bash each other's heads, bruh. Well, you know, and that's great and everything, but you know, there's a science to this game as well. And part of that science is you get checked in a certain part of your head, your temple, your jaw, your chin. You're gonna hit the the concrete, and that's it. And I think that honestly, Dustin Poirier, he's obviously done more since the knee to the head. He beat Pettis and Justin Gaethje. They both beat Justin Gaethje since their first matchup. But I think we saw a lot from Poirier in the Pettis fight that we hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
I personally still think Eddie Alvarez is that millimeter level above Dustin Poirier. If you look at Alvarez's resume, it is a list of – it is a murderer's row of career contenders, period. And Dustin Poirier, while he paid his dues in the featherweight division, you know, he fought Holloway and he fought McGregor. He fought, you know, and he after losing the McGregor fight, he moved up to 155. I just don't think he's there yet. I like Alvarez to win it. I think it's going to be a slugfest. I think they're going to go at each other hard. And I see it ending before regulation ends. I think it's going to be a knockout, and it's going to be not an opening round knockout, though. I think it's going to be a late fight knockout, late round knockout. Also, just want to say, I don't think either, no matter who wins, if Alvarez wins, he will get on that very short list with Ferguson and McGregor. Also, Khabib has come out and said he would fight Alvarez if he couldn't fight Ferguson and McGregor. He'd like to fight Alvarez. So if Alvarez does win this rematch, I believe that he'll be on that short list, but still have one win shy of actually securing a title shot. If Poirier wins, he is on a list, but it's not the same. It's not the same short list. And at minimum, Poirier will still be one win shy of a title shot. And I know he disputes that fact. And I know, you know, but yeah, I like Alvarez to win by late round knockout. And I don't think, no matter who wins, either of them gets title shot from this.
No, I mean, it's a shame that fight ended the way it did. Realistically, if you look at it from a different perspective, Poirier was in a tough spot regardless. Whether or not one of those knees was going to be illegal, I think Alvarez is probably going to be able to win that fight. You know, he's a better wrestler for sure. You look at one of the losses. I mean, he lost to Michael Chandler, one of the best wrestlers out there, period. So, but everything you said is true. I mean, Poirier has more tools in his tool belt. He's done more. Yeah. He's secured his BJJ black belt. So, and you look at that Pettis fight. I mean, everybody's going to go on Twitter and argue with me. Oh, well, that was a submission win. I mean, Pettis, it was a rib injury. That was why he lost. It wasn't a submission win. It was a rib injury. Sherdog will say otherwise, but just listen to old Craig. So Poirier is going to be able to sneak away with a win. It's a tough call. He's a minus 160 favorite in that. And I really think he's going to be able to get the finish of Alvarez. I think Alvarez, you know, he's an older guy. He's faced all that tough competition. Both guys have a lot of miles on them. And the thing that bugs me is that Poirier, I mean, trains at American Top Team. He's got all the sports science behind him. He doesn't look as crisp as GSP did trying to put his hands in front of those lights and all that, but
yeah,
it's
yeah,
a good he, step. It's a good step in the right direction. And I wish he would use that BJJ. I wish when the fight goes to the ground and Alvarez takes him down, he try and submit him, but he won't. So I still have, I've got Poirier in this fight, and hopefully, fingers crossed, you know, they're not afraid to pull the trigger and we don't have another Ngannou Lewis.
I don't think we'll have that problem from either one of these guys. And there's also been more of a kind of hatred since the first fight because of now, you know, Poirier's not sure if it was on purpose, the legal knee or whatever, blah, blah, blah. These guys have unfinished business, and we're lucky we get to watch it. You know, I mean, that's the end of the day. These fights are rare, where you actually have fighters who truly don't like each other and truly have some unfinished business. So, you know, it's free too. So, you know, whatever you're doing, stop it on Saturday and go watch this fight.
Yeah.
You know, and then more importantly, follow, you know, Fight Night Picks and me on Twitter at Above the Full Tie, and check us out on Facebook for all of your fight night needs, because where else would you go?
Yeah, I mean, serious.
You don't need to go anywhere else.
No, you threw your plug out there. Really appreciate having you on. And it's a B to a B plus card. So be excited for UFC Calgary. And then, you know, you close your eyes for a second. And then in October, we've got UFC Moncton, and I'll be there. So really exciting stuff.
We got Toronto in December.
Yeah, for sure. So
yeah, we got tons of Canadian content coming out. We'll be all right.
Yeah, exactly. No, I appreciate having you on again. And I'm sure you'll be back again soon.
I do what I can. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thanks. Always appreciate having time on the podcast. It was a great overview of UFC Calgary coming up on Saturday, and I really appreciate the fan questions. Guys, if you have a question for me or for a guest on the show, make sure you ask it. I'm so thankful that Steven asked us that question, and it'll be really interesting to see what happens with the ESPN Plus deal, and for that matter, the Bellator deal, and how they structure things. I mean, you know, if the fans want to see certain fights on a card and they want to pay a certain fee instead of the entire pay-per-view fee, why not let them? It's interesting. So let's see how that plays out. But before I continue on with the episode, I'd like to thank our sponsors, First Row Collectibles. Head on over to their website. It's firstrow.ca. I'm on there right now. I'm looking at a Bray Wyatt autographed Topps card. There's an Aaron Judge rookie card. You know, you've got hockey cards, baseball cards, old episodes of Sports Illustrated, a Bret Hart autograph card. The list goes on. MMA autograph. So head on over to their website, firstrow.ca. Use the promo code FNP. You'll get free shipping on your order. And, you know, they're located in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. So we had owner Curtis Housen on the podcast quite a number of weeks ago. We broke down, it was interesting, we broke down some of the crossover between WWE and UFC, and it'll be even more interesting to see what happens with Brock Lesnar if there's a crossover fight with Daniel Cormier. So, First Row Collectibles, use the promo code FNP for free shipping on your order today. We're also brought to you by Sisu Mouthguards. I mean, I've had a Sisu Mouthguard for a number of years. One game of hockey, I didn't wear my mouthguard. I get hit right in the tooth, and it came out. And it cost me a lot of money out of pocket, and it was a pain, and I shouldn't have been wearing my mouthguard. And with Sisu, I mean, they're thin mouthguards, they're boil and bite, but they're a lot thinner than, you know, your average mouthguard. If somebody were to wear one in the UFC, they used to have a former big-name UFC fighter that was one of their affiliates, but if you were to wear one in the UFC, you'd be able to talk to your corner people, you'd be able to take interviews after the fight without popping your mouthguard out, you could eat, drink with it in. For me in hockey, it was definitely special because I could yell across the ice for a pass, you could understand me on the bench. And Sisu's recently partnered up with Alex Lemonade Stand Foundation, which is a national childhood cancer research foundation. A sale, or a bit of the proceeds from every sale, 10% will go towards Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation on all yellow mouthguards in the Aero and Junior styles. So you can still head over to Sisu, use the promo code FNP10 at checkout for 10% off. And they'll be donating 10% of the proceeds to Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation. All right, rolling on with the podcast. We've got our second Irish guest in as many weeks, Ben Kiley from Sports Joe over in the UK. Really appreciate having him on. We had a conversation about Bellator, UFC. There's so much going on in MMA, and it's great to get different perspectives. So here's my conversation with Ben. All right, well, I mean, let's get started. So, Ben, how'd you get involved with Sports Joe, and what type of other sports do you cover other than just MMA?
Yeah, well, I got involved in Sports Joe about 4 years ago. I was originally working an internship in another sports website based in Dublin, but I got pretty much straight out of college. Sports Joe was just being founded, so I applied. I'd actually moved out at the same time to, like, out of my family home and into a house in the city center of Dublin. And it turns out the office of Sports Joe was like a 3 minute walk from my new house. So everything kind of fell into place and I started working there. And originally I was an intern and then I, you know, put in all the hard hours and it ended up being my full time stuff. I mainly cover like combat sports and MMA, boxing, and mostly like kind of interviews, built in features. Yeah, I do everything. I'm interested in everything like soccer, football.
Yes, sir. And I mean, we get in contact, I think it was a couple weeks ago or somewhere around that time. You wrote an article about Patricio Pitbull calling out James Gallagher. It was just before Bellator Rome over there. And, you know, building on that article, I had a bit of back and forth with James Gallagher on Twitter last week. And I know as far as your second article, or maybe it was your first article, went, Gallagher was pretty much, you know, being given a title shot at 135, and that was kind of the storyline there. So it kind of killed the Patricio Pitbull storyline. It kind of set something up with Darian Caldwell, who's actually fighting at featherweight at Bellator 204. But now we come to find out that Gallagher is guaranteed a title shot at 135 or 145. So as far as, you know, SBG goes, and it's definitely one of the bigger gyms in the world and one of the bigger gyms in Ireland as well, you know, what can you speak about as far as SBG goes, you know, the top talent that's there, as well that kind of rivalry that's brewing between the Pitbull brothers and Gallagher and different fighters from SBG.
Yeah, well, like in terms of the top talents in SBG and Ireland, like James Gallagher would be right up there. Like he's been one of the top prospects for a while, and now he's almost. I know he's still kind of just being guaranteed a title fight if he wins next. He's almost past the prospect stage, like just like that one fight away from being like graduating from being a title or from a prospect to being like a title challenger. So yeah, he's always like, and he came through like jiu-jitsu was his big thing. He's like submitting like fully grown adults when he was like a young teenager. So like he's been on a lot of like the media over here's radar for a long time. Yeah, that Bellator rivalry that between FBG and the Pitbull brothers. Like, I think from what I could find, it started back with an Instagram post from Bill Pitbull.
Yeah.
I think it was about one of their gym mates. His name was Louis Victor.
Okay.
He was making his Bellator debut. And from what I gathered, Rico was trying to set up a fight between Louis and James Galler. Didn't happen, so it all kind of spiraled out. And then some of the FBG guys, I think it was Brian Moore, he suggested Pete Carroll to do a gym.
Yeah, and I had seen Brian Moore was kind of outspoken there, whether it was on Twitter or another social media platform. And I mean, it seems like every organization you look at, there's an SBG contingent there. You know, we saw Will Fleury make his debut in Bellator last week. Didn't go his way, but, you know, you've got him. You've got Franz Malambo. I guess he headlined that Brave card in Northern Ireland a couple weeks ago. And there's all sorts of top talent there. So, I mean, the MMA landscape in Europe and Ireland seems to be growing, wouldn't you say?
Oh, 100%, sure. And, like, a lot of it in Ireland, like, you have to kind of attribute it to, like, the success of McGregor. Like, obviously, there was the original guys like Owen Roddy, like, you're kind of flying the flag earlier on. People like Ashton Daly, stuff like that, like, they kind of pioneers. Then, like, once McGregor hit the scene, the sport exploded over here. Like, that McGregor is really the reason why I have a job.
And, like, yeah.
Because it was such a niche sport, and, like, just to think of even me covering it, like, 5 or 6 years ago. Yeah, like, it's never even better over here, and I think it'll just continue to grow. Like, people will see, you know, the Irish fighters who are in UFC, who are in Bellator, they're succeeding, like James Gallagher, like McGregor, the likes of Joseph Duffy and all them, like, and, you know, like, that's just going to inspire more people to take it up. But, yeah, I think, like, it's never even better here, and I think it's only going to get better.
Yeah, and I really like the, you know, the Canadian-Irish connection. You've got Brad Katona, who won the Ultimate Fighter, obviously training out of SBG from Winnipeg. You've got Joe Duffy, who trains at TriStar in Montreal. There's quite a bit of a connection there. And, yeah, like you had said, I mean, it seems like with Bellator 200 that we had in England, I mean, that event seemed to be huge for European MMA. I know in North America the ratings weren't great, but that was just due to the fact that there was a tape delay. So I think you know, moving forward, whether it's SBG or if there's another gym that can somehow kind of carry the torch, the McGregor effect is real. And yeah, the MMA landscape in Ireland seems to be huge. And changing gears a little bit, I mean, we had UFC Hamburg from this past weekend. I don't know if you had a chance to watch the entire card, but if you did, what kind of a grade would you give that card, like, as a whole?
What's the lowest grade I can give?
Oh, all right. I mean, I don't know. To some of the guys that covered it live, I know they seem to have a pretty good time, but there were a lot of decisions. I know I was kind of questioning. I think it was early on. It was just before the Manny Bermudez fight. It said fights are going to be coming at the bottom of the hour. So I figured, all right, well, I've got 45 minutes before the bottom of the hour. And I checked my phone at, I believe it was 12:30, and the fight had started. So pacing seemed to be a big issue there and a lot of decisions, but we saw a lot of fighters make pretty decent UFC debuts. So I don't know, what were some of the fights that kind of caught your interest, I guess?
Obviously, I wouldn't take anything away from the fighters. Like, there were some really good fights. Just like we've been banging the same drum about kind of fatigue when it comes to oversaturation of all these cards. Like,
yeah,
it's pretty much a card a week. You've got like the Dana White, you know, like the other series, which I'm actually a fan of. Like, that's also added on, and then you've got all these regional shows, like KSWs, the Bellators, the everything. Like, there's just so much MMA right now, and like, the UFC aren't really helping their brand by just putting out all these so many cards every week, all these fight nights. Like, but in terms of fighters, that stuck out to me, I agree. I think Manny Bermudez, he was a quick. I know we didn't see much of him, but like, from what we saw, he was really good. Bartosz Babinski, the Polish guy, he had a good win against Emil Meek. I know Meek was kind of giving out about being matched up against another grappler, but like, if you see someone that kind of dominant again, so you just have to hold your hands up. Also, I thought Timur Hazovic, the Bosnian, when he fights out of Denmark, he had a really good performance. Nick Pine, a bit more longitude in terms of his UFC career. Maybe a little bit kind of gun shy. Maybe could have went for the finish more. I know Nick Hine was kind of struggling. Like, even said after fight, Hine, he's a tough dude. Like, I think he's a hard guy to finish anyway. Also, the main event, hard look. I know it was kind of like a feeding the old to the young type of headliner, but like Smith had a good year so far. I think, you know, that division isn't maybe the strongest in the UFC, so he could find himself like what Shogun was already third, I think, in the rankings. So he's already up to the business end of that division after what, like two fights.
Yeah, I mean, there were all sorts of fighters on the card that really surprised me, like Darko Stozic. I mean, when I was doing my research, I figured, does he work at Krokop or does he train at Krokop or with Krokop? And then it came out the day of the fight, yeah, he does. So, I mean, he literally retired Jeremy Kimball after the fight. He went on Facebook and said that was it. That's the end of his MMA career. First round TKO for him. So that was pretty impressive there. Manny Bermudez, I mean, his fourth straight triangle choke win, that was pretty impressive. He's living up to the nickname as the Bermudez Triangle. Another one of the fighters that surprised me, and I'm sure you were already familiar with him, but Nad Narimani, who had beaten Paddy Pimblett for the Cage Warriors featherweight title last year. I mean, he out-muscled Khalid Taha, who was a smaller guy, he was a bantamweight, but it was still a pretty dominant performance. There were a couple times where he looked tired in that fight, and I kind of got a little worried because Taha's stand-up looked really good, but Narimani finally able to get the UFC debut, get the win there. And then there were a lot of fighters on that card where I kind of asked myself, and I think I might have asked the question on Twitter two or three times, but what's next for this fighter? I mean, you look at Mark Jacasey, three losses in a row in this fight against Hack Press. I mean, I had Hack Press to win the fight going into it, but Jacasey had a couple opportunities where he created some space, but he just kind of looked gun shy. And he didn't really want to engage. You had Stefan Struve, another guy, three-fight losing streak. Could be a good fit in Bellator. I could see him having good fights against guys like Javi Ayala. You could put him up against, you know, maybe Roy Nelson if that Krokop matchup doesn't happen. And, I mean, yeah, Glover Teixeira kind of at the end of his career. I mean, he was ranked third fighting Corey Anderson. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. And then Shogun, too. I mean, I mentioned it on Twitter, but a few other people did as well. Looked like he had tears in his eyes going into the ring, so it was a little worrisome there. But, I mean, there's a total shakeup at the top of the UFC light heavyweight rankings. You wrote a great article on Khalil Roundtree, you know, dealing with what it was like for him to grow up without a father. His father, obviously, he was killed when Khalil was really young. And kind of how he found MMA, and he had a great knockout against Gokhan Saki at UFC 226. So what do you anticipate happening with the UFC light heavyweight division going forward?
I think it's in a bit of a mess right now. And yeah. Like, champion, he's taking super fights against Brock Lesnar, Stephen Jokic. So he's going to, like, I know he said he wanted to fight Shogun if Shogun won. But again, I don't think that was a fight people were really clamoring to see. I think, like, we saw what Smith did to Shogun. I think that Cormier would do way worse stuff to Shogun. So, like, I can't really see Cormier come back and defend that title. And I don't really want to see him in that. Like, I don't think the contenders are there for him. He just looks better at heavyweight. And then, like, you have that big fight fall through between Volkan and Austin. So, like, the top three guys in that division are all either injured or they're off doing other things. So, see someone like Smith and you're like, what's he even fighting for there? Like, you know,
yeah.
No, there's no real route to a title there. He's like, Cormier is going to hang up the closed in March. You know, who's, what are they even doing here? Like, they're not going to get it all those like, so. And it's what used to be a kind of a glamour division you see when you have to, like, you know, chuckle it down, Dito Ortiz there. Like, stars aren't really there now. And again, like, the kind of elements in the room we're not kind of addressing is John Jones, who's like a pay-per-view draw. He's arguably the biggest or the best fighter to ever step inside Yachtson. He's away dealing with his own issues as well. And Anthony Johnson, too, like, he's retired last year. It just feels like there's a kind of a dearth of talent in that fight heavyweight. Or maybe not, at least comparatively to older divisions. It just feels like the top guys aren't fighting there. I'm sure it'll give the likes of, like, Khalil Rampage the chance to kind of move up the ladder pretty quickly. But, like, it's just, you gotta wonder what are they moving towards.
Yeah, and I mean, I had Mike Heck on Friday, and we kind of tossed around the idea of light heavyweight Grand Prix. I know that'll never happen. It's more of a Bellator promo thing than anything, but it's an option for the UFC. I mean, if you go down and you look through light heavyweight rankings and other organizations, I mean, you had Nikita Krylov in Fight Nights Global, top 10 in the UFC. He's returning. Hopefully he's going to be having a fight at UFC Moscow coming up here soon. M1's got a pretty decent light heavyweight division. ACB does as well. But you also saw, I believe it was M1 Global's light heavyweight champ moved over and fought in PFL, lost his debut. So there's not a whole lot you can do. Like you said, Anthony Smith, he wins this fight. Well, who do you put him up against? Does he fight OSP? OSP's kind of always in that division. It's kind of, stagnant. Wins don't really mean a whole lot. Rankings don't mean much. The title shot's probably going to go to, you know, Gustafson or Uzdemir, but you've already seen those fights before. Johnson retired. Looks like he's going to move up to heavyweight if he does come back. I mean, he looks big. So, yeah, he is. He's running his Canadian marijuana corporation and packing on the pounds. And so, yeah, it's definitely tough. And I mean, you look at matchups going forward. Like, I looked coming up this weekend, you've got Gachmrad Antigulov taking on Ion Kutalaba, who's one of my favorite light heavyweights to watch, but coming back off USADA suspension for blood doping. So, yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to see what happens with that light heavyweight division.
Yeah, I think an issue with that division was that there wasn't really much of the kind of a changing of the guard. Like, we thought Shogun was right up there until his last fight. No, he's been in this game. Kind of want the young guys. You want people like someone who I marked as like kind of a prospect in that division was Tyson Pedro. Kind of like, he hasn't gotten that win to kind of move him into the business end of the division. We're just missing that kind of that young wave. We're missing like an Israel Adesanya or someone that beat Magomedov Karpov. He kind of takes that division by storm. A lot of people thought it was Volkan, but a lot of people thought it was Misha Serkinov, and again, like, they were just like, they've had their stumbling block, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And hopefully we can see Misha Serkinov with a return, you know, big Canadian name there. So we'll leave it there. Ben, thanks so much for coming on. Where can people find you online and where can they find your work?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at the Jive Master. All my stuff is on sportshow.ie.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on. We'll have to have you back on again. Great having Ben on the show. Definitely check out his work over there at Sports Joe. You know, you get that European perspective on MMA. There's a lot of tension brewing. You've got Moore and the Pitbull brothers, Gallagher and the Pitbull brothers. It seems like SBG against Brazil, which could be a great rivalry coming up in Bellator. Lots of exciting stuff. UFC Calgary, appreciate having Ty O'Keefe on. Love the fan questions. Keep them coming. Episode number 32 of the podcast is going to be coming out tomorrow. You're going to have a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher as well. We're going to be on YouTube tomorrow. We've got, quite a few great guests coming up. So, episode 32 tomorrow, and then we'll be back early next week to recap the fight. So, we'll see you again tomorrow.